Dialogue assassination with KLRB. I'm Gloria Barron.
Well, May, when you came in today, the news machine had just finished reporting something that was rather startling, and I should tell our audience that we are recording this on Tuesday, September 14th. And this morning, the UPI came across with this. A medical examiner says that 8 of the 10 hostages killed in the Attica prison riot in New York died of gunshot wounds. Earlier, it had been reported that their throats were cut. Do you want to make a comment on that, May?
Well, I personally feel we shouldn't get started. I'm very bitter. And about the fourth broadcast we made, Gloria, somebody, I was just giving out facts, I think, on the Robert Kennedy case in Los Angeles and the evidence that had been fouled up and mishandled, and a few personal observations. And one of my close friends said, "May, you sounded bitter on that broadcast," and I thought it was pretty academic because I had prepared a lot of material. This is called Dialogue Assassination, and every week we're trying to call attention to the fact that the political assassinations of leaders in the United States are tied in to current news today. And it is very difficult for me, after preparing a week's information during the week, to pick up Sunday's paper and have 10 or 12 articles of the kind that I read. And I just ready to throw my hands there and say, oh, forget it. There is no hope in this country. And then on the other hand, I have this conflict because we're on the air this week. And I did a show on KIDD for an hour, question and answers. And there'll be a television show, local television, Sunday night, 7 to 7:30. So we are getting exposure to the information. So I'll talk to you about political assassinations and the scene in New York. But I predicted that after my research in 64 and 1965, that the line of evidence that I saw of what happened and what was happening in the United States because of the way the murder of John Kennedy was covered up, that we would be in a total police state by 1972. And I've said on other shows that this is going to be the bloodiest country. It's going to be another Vietnam. And I could just do one show on all the intimations of this coming to a head. And this country will be unlivable by 1972. No place and no person will be safe. And the Attica, New York thing, people who never listen to me talk about political assassinations shake their head and say, isn't it awful? Isn't it awful? As if it wasn't planned. Just last night I was reading an issue of Computer and Automation. I told you they run a series on political assassinations. I was reading the chapter over again on how many coincidences make a conspiracy. And it's very interesting. Mr. Berkeley, who graduated from Harvard, cum laude, he got all kinds of honors at Harvard University and does studies on probability and coincidences and feeds them into computers now, had a whole quotation from a study of Nazi Germany. And in order, after World War One. And in order for Hitler to take over in 32, 400 political leaders were killed. And this Computers and Automation goes into a detailed study of Nazi Germany and then relates it to the killing of the Black Panthers in this country and to what's going to happen in a political assassination. 400 leaders were killed in order to take the power, and they had to have an appearance of a system of justice. So that the trials all along, as these people were murdered, the guilty ones were made to look innocent, and the innocent were twisted around to look guilty. And the analytical study of Nazi Germany is very important. It's important for my research because I feel that the cartels, the German cartels, the Nazis, that didn't want to coexist with the Soviet Union, took over our complete State Department and Pentagon and killed our president and candidates, and they're killing the civil rights leaders and the black leaders or the whites if they have to at Kent State. And this is not a coincidence. All these names and orders can all be tied together. Now, what you get in New York is a group of men asking for a set of prison conditions to be changed. And 500 state troopers went in, 200 more troopers went in, 50 National Guards came with 600 more troops, helicopters were over the sky. Then the sheriff's deputies from the county around, 14 surrounding counties, came in their own automobiles with deer rifles, pistols, surplus army carbines, and shotguns, and were given riot helmets yellow and orange rain slickers and so forth. Now, up to that point, the hostages weren't even touched. And it is a terrible condition. Now, President Nixon has come in and he said, we approve. And this article in the morning paper says that Governor Rockefeller, he's been charged of using these murders for a political ploy. You better believe by 72, and I mentioned this on another show for those of you who take the tapes every week and listen, the excuse for taking over is the country will not be livable, and you better believe that it's not going to be. Now, it doesn't surprise me that the men who went into the prison to save the hostages shot them themselves or lied that their throats were cut, because no amount of investigation that they do will do anything but back up what I am saying about the forces that are in power today. And what you have in this state, you have Soledad and you have San Quentin, and our prison system is just like Auschwitz. And you have Governor Reagan coming in at this end, and he's going to take a trip with Air Force One and a presidential plane this week and go to South Korea and Formosa, Taiwan, and make another excursion duplicating the Agnew trip. Ronald Reagan shouldn't even leave this state. It is so horrendous. If you people in California can't believe that he has no business leaving this state and going to Asia, and I feel that part of the sending him there is that he's never really been into the international thing, and there's a very good chance that Richard Nixon's going to be killed. And you couldn't nominate a man like Reagan or push him into a position if he didn't know something about world affairs. We did with Agnew. It didn't work. So they're going to send him on these junkets where he doesn't belong. He belongs right home in this state. And Mrs. Jackson is saying today in the newspaper that she wants her son's death investigated in front of the United Nations. Now, you have all the evidence of that murder in San Quentin that has not gone into. You have the Bobby Kennedy thing in Los Angeles. You have Everill Younger, the Attorney General of the state, named in a conspiracy of murdering Robert Kennedy. The mayor of New York, of Los Angeles, Mariotti, named in this suit. You have Governor Ronald Reagan with these murders going on and the massacres of families like the Oda or the Sharon Tate massacre. You have a state of Earl Warren covering up the Warren report. This state is so filled with intrigue and conspiracy and the same kind of thing that put Hitler into power. And it's going to be election year. And I don't know, Gloria, the killing of these men and the hostages is understandable when life is expendable and you want power. And the evidence will come out, like the Kent State, the private investigator that did the Kent State, got information, the man from New York, that a gun was to be a signal to shoot into two particular kids. They'd take four if they had to. The sound recordings of the shooting have been verified. A gun did go off as a signal. And John Mitchell says the case is closed. So I think this, the helicopters and the gunning and calling in the neighbors with their hunting rifles is just the beginning. The third world or the world revolution has started, and people don't want to see it. They really don't want to know what's happening, and they don't know how the people in power got the power. And they will give them more approval, more guards, more care. And these are the political assassination teams that are tightening their power in 72, just as I predicted. Now, in San Jose State, the president there, I'll write to him this week, the president of the college, John H. Bunzel, had an article in the Mercury this morning accusing Ronald Reagan of some heavy charges of ruining the California educational system. If Mr. Bunzel wanted to get away from the theoretical and get to the very practical, he could get the newspapers in Florida that I've mentioned where Ronald Reagan and Governor Kirk met, and Governor Kirk, in his campaign a few years ago, said he wanted to break the University of California. And on another show, we mentioned how he and Ronald Reagan had lunch in California as soon as they were elected, and Clark Kerr was then fired, and the University of California and our educational system has been put down. Now, the president of San Jose College has a long article with a lot of charges, but he comes to this remark in his opening day speech. He says, against the backdrop of political and social turbulence, we are witnessing a significant redistribution of power, authority, and influence in the academic world. In its own way, it is a major revolution. For at stake, it is nothing less than our own independence and autonomy. Now, the people that know anything about economic problems, that know more than Mr. Connolly, say we're, I'm going to read some articles on the economy, and we'll talk about that. Say we're in a really tough way. We're going to a police state with these controls that Richard Nixon put. We are riding our own ticket to fascism. The academic world is saying there's the fascism. The convicted are saying our evidence that we're innocent is being destroyed. We're not getting fair trials. The news media is crying. I'm going to read you an article that came out Sunday on crying about the news media and fascism. Everybody at every level is going to hurt. And they're going to be hurt because the power was usurped. And until you find out who did these murders, what fingerprints were on the guns, and call in the people who did it, if they can kill your leaders, they're going to kill you. And they're going to kill those hostages. They didn't think a thing about shooting those hostages down, evidently, and blaming the other group. And everybody wants quick answers. They want to be told, we'll get more guards and you'll be safe. Now, at San Quentin last week, after the problem that they had over at the San Quentin jail, some new guards were hired, and 21 applied right away. Now, it isn't a very happy job, and you wonder why in the hell they would want it. But the important thing is this. A newspaper man writing the article said that the people that came were very secretive about their background and their motives for wanting to be guards. Now, anybody who cared about the prison system would have to have, I should think, publicly the application of the guards and what state they came from and where they worked and what was their training. Are they coming from Fort Ord? If you're in a police state, if you're in a military-type government, where are the guards who are secretive about their background going to? Because you will get more killings at San Quentin, and the hostages someday are going to be you. It's going to be outside the prison walls. It's going to be everywhere. And until the people can see that their lives, we've said before, until they can see that their lives are related to what's happening. Now, the cover-up for the New York thing and for San Quentin is going to be that outside influences are coming in and changing the system and arousing these people. I had did a lot of work at Fort Ord when the mutiny trial was there for the boys who disliked the prison conditions at the stockade in San Francisco. And these boys sat on the ground, 20 of them, and they chanted that there was sewage on the floor and feces floating around and no pipes to take the stuff away and the food was bad and they were overcrowded in these rooms and they shot this bunch who was just a mentally disturbed boy who walked away and they just shot him back in front of the other boys. And the conditions at Presidio Stockade were so bad, and I kept a list of them, that the fellows, there was a confrontation. Should we have a violent scene here or should we sit down and chant? And they chose to sit down and chant. And right away the Presidio official said, we can't have this. So the first sentence was 20 years in jail and the next was 16 years in jail. And people became incensed and furious that this was too strict for these men. One man wanted leave because his wife had the children and she was away drinking. The kids were alone in the house and he couldn't get a pass. So he went AWOL and he was stuck in the stockades and then given 16 years for seeing his babies were alone in an apartment, this kind of thing. So as a result of people in the community, in this community, in Monterey, Carmel, and Pacific Grove, about 20 of us, going to the trials every day and riding to Stanley Reeser and the White House and so forth, the boys are all out of jail now. They're not hurting anybody. The longest had a sentence of maybe 2 years, somewhere out in 3 months. And I feel very proud that we were able to reduce all of these sentences. And I had the telephone number of the White House. I called night and day and really bothered them. In fact, I was invited to be on a commission to go into crime in the state. And I'm sorry I didn't, but I was working on assassinations. But outside people who care about these things will begin to see that the complaints may be legitimate. And in our police state, they're going to crack down on people like me that are saying, these things are provoked in order to get more power. They are provoked, and the people inside the prison who are talking about legitimate complaints are forced into a position, and then the blood spills, and then you get more guards.
Do you think there's still time to rectify these?
I don't think so. I'm in a bad mood today, I told you. I think there's a conspiracy to take over this government like there was in Nazi Germany and make an absolute fascism. I think there's a conspiracy to hide who did it because you'll gain political power and you don't want to rock the boat, and it's expedient not to stir up problems that may put us in a bad light in Europe. And then there's a general indifference of 90% of the people who really don't care.
That's probably the problem area.
It's the problem area. Well, let's be specific. We've been on this show 11 weeks, and I talk about political assassinations, and I did a whole show on Jack Anderson's article called Balderdash, in which he, in the New Orleans paper, talked about a document by Don Riley in San Francisco that's in Washington now, naming the people who killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. And I called attention to the fact that the Monterey Herald never carried the article, nor did the San Francisco Chronicle or San Jose Mercury or the LA Times. And that we've been on this show, we were already on about 8 weeks, and that this should be of interest to the local people because we've built up a good following here in Santa Cruz, but nothing was in the paper. Well, the Monterey Herald obliged me, and they did print that article August 29th, just a week and a half ago. And they didn't call the title Balderdash. They called it conspiracy. Now, there's a lot of people here, informers or people listening from the FBI or the CIA who take down what I'm saying and sent to Washington. I know that's happening. But among my friends or my fans or the people that write letters or that call the studio or call me, who listen every week, who take tapes, they don't take the New York Times or any of the other papers I take. Some of them take the Herald, and some don't even take that. And when the Herald actually writes about this document, not one person that I know picked it up and said, "May, it was in the paper." And this is the way people are reading, even the people that agree with me. And that's the problem. I mean, that is the problem right there. I'm ready to throw up my hands. The government doesn't have to stop me from talking because the people I'm talking to can't follow it through. Now, you take the other side, the conservatives, and I think of the survival of the fittest argument or Ayn Rand and the political conservatives. If they have an idea, they file it, they cross-file, they write a letter, they support the man who supports what they think. They tell their people to go to these places and support it. They follow it through. They have something to say. They've got their money, they've got their property, and their white skin, and they're pretty secure, and they know what they want. And by golly, they'll go to hell and back to back it up. And I have always respected the conservative, the actual conservative, in that sense. He'll go to hell and back to back it up. But the so-called educated, the liberal, the person who is with you, he can't follow it through. And it's a sad situation because he can't say, "Oh, wow, our paper had it," or say, "Did you see this?" or make copies. Nobody knows how to read a paper or reads a paper. And there's many people who call me. Somebody called me, a close friend, and they go to marches, war protests, they go to hell and back to out in the fields with Cesar Chavez, and you have a program on political assassinations. And you talk about how Chavez can be killed, too, if he goes too far. And these people will support these causes at a very low level. But if you say, "Did you hear the show this week?" "Oh, we don't have FM. They're too sophisticated to listen to anything." Or, "Did you read the paper?" "Oh, I wouldn't read the paper anymore because it's all
bad news."
Bad news. How could you possibly know what is happening in the world? And those are the people that, as I say, the conservative knows what he wants to save. If the liberal wants to save his life, if he wants equal job opportunities, if he wants to see that maybe 10,000 people don't control the entire economy of this nation or the world, he's not doing anything about it. And I really feel bitter because he just can't move himself to effect a change. It's expedient to talk, but it isn't expedient to change. We did get a flood of letters. Now, the man that I always talk about, Medford Evans, who writes for John Birch Society, American Opinion. I read him every month. His book reviews are brilliant. He's perfectly honest. And one listener who likes the shows has tried to influence her mother to hear the tapes that they send back to Florida. And the mother said, "Well, you're quoting The Nation. What is The Nation magazine? Who prints it? Who says it?" She wanted to read the article about Bud Fensterwald's committee. So today I thought I would just read you a book review of Special Unit Senator by Medford Evans. It was in American Opinion this year, November 1970. And he talks about Sirhan, Sirhan, and how when the guerrillas hijacked the jet planes last year, the Palestinians wanted Sirhan out of San Quentin in exchange. Medford Evans says, now these are his quotes, "Nothing is more vital to the establishment than the denial of conspiracy at high level. The hard line is that nothing serious ever happens, at least in the United States, as a result of the conspiracy. To hold this line, the Warren Report was prepared, declaring that Oswald was a loner. In the book, Special Unit Senator, it serves the same purpose. Robert Houghton, chief of detectives in L.A., who must, however, be a more honest man than Earl Warren, he says there is no evidence of conspiracy. He means no evidence that would stand up in court. And there's no evidence, he says, that would stand up in any present-day federal court of any kind. Logically, he said, there's a highly persuasive evidence that Sirhan Sirhan was involved in a conspiracy. Successful conspiracies lose and often deliberately sacrifice certain members, but they do not leave evidence in a lawyer's sense of the word. And Mr. Uten says there was no evidence. If Sirhan is also a fall guy, he goes on to say, he was used by the Arab Israeli group and the politically oriented in Los Angeles. Politics means an association to gain or hold power through concerted action. And the only thing that distinguishes political action from conspiratorial action is that the former does not have to be criminal. Conspirators do not have to communicate explicitly with each other. Remember the Warren Report under conspiracy, where the right wing was brought in and they had 6 pages clearing the Dallas oil people of conspiracy and John Kennedy, and they said because there's no evidence that Ruby knew Oswald, there could be no conspiracy. And I did a show on this showing just how wrong this was. And Medford Evans quotes the case of the Rosenbergs in which they were killed for a conspiracy which is much less obvious than the one in Los Angeles. And Medford Evans says an explicit or formal agreement is not necessary. When Sirhan killed Kennedy, he said, I did it for my country. Now the revolution of his country is required to do something for him. And he repeated several times, I did it for my country. Medford Evans says, in Special Unit Senator, there were reasons to conclude there was a conspiracy to murder Robert Kennedy. I wish the books had an index to facilitate checking every reference to particular names and a floor plan. He wrote this in the same month, I mean, to quote here, the same month that this book review was done. Computers and Automation did an index of the book for researchers because it was not indexed to see which witnesses were not called. Back to Medford Evans in American Opinion. Every enfranchised American has a responsibility to question as thoroughly as possible the circumstances of an event which suggests that violence has a veto over the nomination for the presidency. Even if the said American didn't like the particular candidate whose case got vetoed, some were robbed of the chance for Bobby to vote for him, and the rest of us the chance to vote against him. But if there was a conspiracy to kill him, we all need to know it. This is the John Birch Society saying, I would be glad to vote against him, but we should have had a chance to do it. And then he goes into how Bobby Kennedy got into the ambassador pantry and mentions in his article a Bill Barry, who was Kennedy's bodyguard, who decided to change and go to a different direction because the people would find out which way the senator was going to go. End quotes. Remember last week I said that Bill Barry was the ex-FBI man who was supposed to be front man for Robert Kennedy, and he was behind the line with Ethel, and Ethel said, what are you doing here? You should be up there with Bobby. Well, the John Birch Society is calling attention that Bill Barry, the guard for Robert Kennedy, was the man who took him through the kitchen and is suggesting very strongly the involvement of Bob Barry in directing him through that pantry where Sirhan was waiting. He says the last-minute decision by Bill Barry and Fred Dunn may have been to increase Bobby's security, but it resulted in his isolation in the presence of his assassin who was waiting there. But nothing is more incredible than the fact that Bill Barry, whom Chief Houghton calls Kennedy's sole experienced bodyguard, locked his hand over the hand with a gun later and then turned it away from Sirhan. Now, Medford Evans says, a great spate of books on the Kennedy assassination in Dallas began 2 or 3 years after the coup d'etat of November 22, 63. Perhaps special unit standard will be the beginning of a similar outpouring regarding the Kennedy assassination in Los Angeles. More has been done, as a matter of fact, regarding the Kennedy affair at Chappaquiddick. The Los Angeles case may be the toughest of the three to write about, because even more obviously than the others, it raises the question of original protective responsibility. Dealey Plaza is a large area. Chappaquiddick was dark and lonely, but the death in the Ambassador Hotel was small and well-lighted and easy to control. Now, if conservatives do not like my quoting certain articles that they think are slanted, I will read you every week from the American Opinion. The policy has been to say it was a coup d'etat, the conspirators are out on the streets, and the country cannot run efficiently. And I think they... I brought in another article by the same gentleman, Manfred Evans, that I can read later, but I want to jump to some other subjects that were in the news this week, where he goes into the conspiracies in Dallas. Now, there was an article, Sunday's paper, Hypocrite of the Week. We talked about, we had a candidate last week, Representative McCloskey, was going to go for truth in government, and Ernest Conine in the San Jose Mercury called that about the Hypocrite of the Week. He said, the present-day folk hero, now this is very interesting, Ernest Conine said, the present-day folk hero is a fellow who stands right in and tells it like it is, who lets it all hang out regardless of consequences. He who gets a reputation for speaking with a forked tongue is lost. I got a letter from somebody in Seaside saying, you're my heroine. You know, I love what you're saying, and it's really great. And I would like to be that kind of folk hero who lets it all hang out, who says the truth. But the hypocrite of the week went to Representative Paul McCloskey, who's running on truth in government. And then the second award went to Regan, who said that taxes should hurt, and then didn't pay any taxes last year on the street. And the third hypocrite was when Muskie said he didn't think a black vice president would win, and Samuel, he said, oh, I'd be glad to have a vice president as my running mate after what he did to Bradley and the slap in the face in Los Angeles. The article says, all those Democratic liberals who've been demanding a reordering of national priorities have something to do, too. Well, this is what we're talking about on the show, really. The hypocrites, who are throwing, 72 is coming up or it's not coming up, and every day the newspapers just filled with what candidates will do or won't do, and it is obscene. The only word is obscene. There is nothing in those things that touches truth. Now, Mr. Talcott, Representative Talcott, called from Washington to Salinas to see what was going on at KLRB. I talked with his secretary. Representative Talcott came to Carmel. He talked at the golf club over in the valley, 1 mile from my home. He wouldn't come to my home. He talked to the women, the Republican Party there, on low-cost housing in the Soviet Union. I mean, he's going back to Washington. Here's the talk of overchanging the system of government in Washington. And he is talking about housing in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, he did, with all due respect to Representative Talcott, he did send you a message through us.
He sent a message that he didn't want to ignore me, but he was too busy. But he did go.
That he will be back and
yeah, but
wants
you just
to
see,
talk with you.
He's not going to handle this. He is not going to. Let's call him what he is. That is the gentleman's way of doing it. He talked to the League of Women Voters on issues in the country. He didn't talk about the political assassination. I'm talking about the usurping of power. And he wants to be, he will be a congressman who decides whether men will be tried for murder or impeached. And he doesn't want to be knowledgeable on that vote. You see, he's 1 mile from my house, Gloria. And he's talking about low-cost housing in Yugoslavia. If we stopped the war for one day, we could put low-cost housing in any city of America. For one day, we have enough money.
I'll take a break here. You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Brussel. This is KLRB Stereo FM, Carmel by the Sea.